Hello, Chad.
Hello, Caitlin.
It's been eons since we have talked about Poirot.
We talked a lot about Poirot.
So much.
In a specific book called The Murder on the Lynx. And that was what we thought would be one episode turned into, I don't even know how many. What,
six?
Six?
Yeah.
Something like that. So yeah. we needed a little time
a break.
For decompression. Yeah, a little break.
Yeah.
A little break. Not that we don't, like, not that we're not good friends.
No.
Not that we don't both enjoy each other's company, but just the process needed to kind of just, oh boy.
Yeah.
For a second.
We, needed to recover. We needed to, like, remember who we were.
Yep.
We need to turn inward.
Right. Exactly. Right. It's exactly right. Oh, so good. Yes, but now we are back.
We are talking about and preparing everyone to read The Murder of Roger Ackroyd, which is the third book in the series, fourth one we've covered because of the Halloween party. This is still Poirot early days. There are twists and turns, not only in the plots, but just in, like, what to expect in every book. There's a lot at stake.
Yeah, I think we don't want to give anything away about the book, but I just would say that this is a remarkably different book than either Styles or Lynx.
Yeah.
It is much, much, much different.
Yeah. So let's give people an idea of, like, what they're in for and how it's different. You had mentioned something really interesting when we were chatting beforehand just about Ackroyd. And you were like, I think this is the first book I'm going to recommend that people actually read.
Yeah, that's how I feel. I think a lot of our listeners, and thank you to all of our listeners mm-hmm. for listening,
yeah.
Sometimes listen to the episodes instead of reading the book. And mm-hmm. that's great. More power to you. That's wonderful. I would say that for the first three books that we've done, that honestly, if you're an Agatha Christie completist, then definitely read them. But, like, this is the first book that I think is as close to being essential to read as I can think of. Like, it's really an essential part of the mystery novel genre.
I would agree with you. I think just in general, like, this book is one that I would recommend for non-Agatha Christie fans. Like, if you are going to read one that's in the Poirot canon, maybe, this is one of the top ones I'd recommend. Maybe, like, top five for sure. We talked a lot about how the first two books are her, like, proving that she belongs in the genre. And this one is her saying, and now look what I can do with it. Here's how I fit in to what you all have already been doing. And then let me surprise everyone and play with your expectations.
Yeah.
You know how we were saying, like, okay, these books are either Byzantine or Baroque and they're just, like, full of all these details. And, like, if we were just, like, walking through a museum, we are entering the minimalist modern art wing.
Yeah, that's great.
Where it's like suddenly a painting just has a line through it. And it's mm-hmm. like all the extra stuff is removed. And it's so exciting to see what Agatha Christie can do, what the Poirot character does.
And speaking of Hercule Poirot, where do you think this is within his existence?
We definitely have the order of, like, Styles, Lynx. And you can feel that between Styles and Lynx, a couple years have gone by where mm-hmm. Poirot has established that he has made his second career as a detective in London of international fame. He's like the phoenix rising from the ashes out of World War I. And then he's like, hello, look at me. I'm so famous. I'm a household name. And so then we have to kind of assume that after links, a couple more years, I'd say, have gone by. Maybe you can argue against that. But Poirot is older, even though he began as an old man. I sense that he's like, maybe not tired in the way he was in Halloween Party, but he is over this grandeur of his career, and he is trying something new. He's trying a go at the quiet life of quote unquote retirement.
It takes place in the British countryside.
Yeah.
He also has a very, without giving anything away, there's a very interesting introduction that lets mm-hmm. you know kind of where his priorities are
yeah.
at this point in time, because he's gardening, mm-hmm. basically.
Yeah. This is a different Poirot. He's like a man of the earth, or maybe not, depending on his success. But actually, jumping around a little bit, going back to A Haunting in Venice, that's what it was, the Venice one, whatever. That beginning of the movie was one of my favorites because I felt like it was such a shout out to a reference to the beginning of this book.
Yes.
And so that yeah. was a part of it that I felt the most attached to, but also the most excited to see on the screen, because this is one of the, like, even though I like, and we'll get into this a little bit, I think we both agree that this book is very serious. This is one of the silliest Poirots ever, I think, is like the first scene in this book.
Definitely. He's also strangely pleased with himself and seems much more at peace, I would say,
yeah.
and is really just kind of tossing vegetable marrows over into his neighbor's yard. And we did look up what a vegetable marrow is. And what was it again?
What I would like you to think of is it's the fall. It's gourd season. It's pumpkin season. You're going to the grocery store. For some reason, I immediately think of like a Trader Joe's, and there are those like bins of decorative gourds, and they're all different shapes and sizes. You know, some of them are like green with yellow. Some of them are tan. Some of them are orange. All of those are like a marrow. So just imagine it's like a medley of squashes, gourds, whatever you'd grow in your garden on those big curly vines. And he's growing them. And so this is so un-Poirot too, because he's throwing them, which seems so disorderly for the man that loves order. So I'm like, is he having like a little Poirot midlife / three quarters of the way through life crisis where he's like, maybe I just throw things.
Yeah. The visual that I get is that he's almost like an animal that is digging and throwing things around.
Is that just like what the countryside does to him? I don't know.
I don't know.
But also, you know, this is maybe a good time for us to talk about too, like Agatha Christie. We're not going to go too much into what's going on in her life. We, you know, we went into in the previous series, Lynx, how she's definitely having some marriage angst during these years. And she's about to embark on one of the most fascinating, interesting, weird, probably for her darkest moments in her life, where she actually has a bit of a mystery herself. This hasn't happened yet when she's writing the book. And I think we'll dive into this after the series, right? The big Christie disappearance.
I think we can promise a special episode
yeah.
on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it doesn't quite wrap into any book in particular, but we definitely want to give you that info and that background. And we want to do it justice and not try to like just throw it into a pre-read. But we can say that she is in a dark period. And it was interesting. I think we both agreed too that like this book has romance in it. Hastings is in Argentina at this point. I think that's a good thing to talk about too. He is. Yes. And so for people who I guess are like maybe just jumping in right now, Hastings was Poirot's previous sidekick who narrated the first two books. And he is like a lovable oaf, I would say. A lovable mm-hmm. oaf in love with love. And whenever you see the world through his eyes, it's all about the ladies. It's all about love. And he also has this arrogance about him that Poirot is so foolish, even though he's the one who's being foolish. So this is the first time that Agatha Christie introduces a new narrator. And this is a pattern that will happen quite a bit, I'd say, as the series progresses. And I think as she kind of tires of Poirot, which we talked about in the intro, our intro episode, she gets a little fatigued with Poirot as a whole. And so a lot of her books begin with like other people's lives, begin with a town, a group of people. We get sucked into their drama. We're seeing it all from their perspective. And then maybe halfway or even two thirds of the way through, Poirot enters as the one who's going to help solve it all. But he's an outsider in a different way. He's not buddies with the narrator. And so this is kind of the first time we get that. And we get the new narrator of Dr. Shepherd, who's actually read some of Hastings' published accounts, which is kind of fun. And he's like, let me try my hand at doing the same thing.
It doesn't have the same Hastings vision, right? It doesn't have like the in love with life sort of thing.
You can like imagine it as like if a doctor were reporting what had happened to you during your surgery. Like the patient did this and then they did this. But something else that I find really refreshing about this book is we do get other female characters and they're not the objects of the narrator's like affection and adoration and like amorous pursuits. We get this really cool back and forth between the doctor and his sister, who's very clever, and they have just this like wonderful banter. And there's just a lot of that fun Agatha Christie, like zippy one-liners that both of them provide. That is such a characteristic of like later books where everyone is just so clever and they're like commenting on the way people are and, you know, weird habits that people have. And you're like, oh, this is Agatha Christie getting to like really relish in narrating the world through her characters. And I think she has so much more freedom when she's outside of Hastings to do that.
Oh yeah. One of my favorite parts of the book is that the Dr. Shepherd lives with his sister and she has this kind of almost like underground network of people who are giving her information about what happens in the town. And it's just so delightful because Dr. Shepherd's always like, how do you know this? Like you're sitting here and you know more than I do. It's great.
She's that like, oh, I'm unassuming, but I'm going to get to know the person who delivers my groceries, the person who delivers this, the person who works at this manor. And then the world of gossip is open to me. And so it's this fun way of like, kind of the chain of like staff, but also women sharing knowledge, which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
You have a ton of smarties in this one too. Like Dr. Shepherd is very intelligent. I mean, in ways that he underestimates his sister for sure. Like it's all these different types of intelligence competing with each other. You know, he's different than Poirot. She's kind of trying to see if she can outbeat Poirot as well. And so it's not like we're getting a bunch of bumbling buffoons, kind of like we were getting like the detective off with Giraud and Hastings. Right. Like Poirot is given much more, I don't want to say opponents, but like people who are also trying to solve this case. He is given like a much more formidable cast of characters to prove himself to, as opposed to these people who are like, yeah, well, clearly they're dumb. there's a bit more like everybody is witty, and that's really exciting to see too.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I feel like, you know, this is just a different Poirot. This is I don't really know how to explain it.
Yeah. He's still an outsider, but of course, like an outsider in a new way. He's new in town. I don't want to give them away, but there are so many good jokes between the brother and sister trying to figure out who Poirot is and what his deal is. And they have these hilarious guesses. Yes. They're like using these context clues, like, well, he does this, so maybe he's this kind of person. And then finally they're like, oh, okay, it's Poirot. But it's kind of fun because Poirot's still in his famous heyday. Like I think one of the young women, when she hears who he is, she's like, oh, you're the famous Poirot. Whereas later on, Poirot will like announce himself and nobody knows who he is. And he's like, oh my gosh, like how the world has fallen that people don't recognize my name anymore. And so he's still in that he's still riding on his fame. The British Crime Writers Association calls this the best crime novel of all time. This book has a lot of accolades for many reasons, and so it isn't one to skip. It's one to just like read and enjoy. And I think you and I have read this book a couple times each, and I think each time we read it, we get more out of it. Do you want to tell people like kind of how you stumbled upon this book?
I think it was a couple years ago. I read the book and then we talked about it for a little while. And then you were like, you're reading them out of order. And I was like, I am reading them out of order. And then you started to talk about like, maybe we should do a podcast where we read them in order.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's actually a really good idea. Okay, that's cool. So the first time I read it, I really liked it. But, and I'd heard, you know, that it was one that you have to read. But I only read it once and it didn't really hit me mm-hmm. like it has during these readings of mm-hmm. it now. Like now it's like, oh yeah. Okay. Wow. This is an incredible book.
The New Yorker says that with this book, Agatha Christie created the modern murder mystery. So like, I think we can see so many echoes of this in just like pop culture. In every mystery we watch, you can see the story there.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
And I was just going to say, it's really funny that my reaction to you was, Chad, you're reading this out of order.
Or do you have anything else you'd like to say before we go into some adaptations?
You've done so much great research just on both like where this book is in pop culture, but also a little bit about the history of how it was published and everything. So just tell us. I'm ready to listen. I'm ready to learn.
Okay, The Murder of Roger Ackroyd is a work of detective fiction by Agatha Christie, which was first serialized in 54 parts
in
the London Evening News from the 16th of July 1925 to the 16th of September 1925. So it was done almost daily, which is amazing.
Yeah, and honestly, it's so interesting because this one reads so quickly. Would breaking it up into 50-odd pieces slow it down, or would it keep up the pace? Like, it didn't have that big twist. This one is very, it's very methodical. It's very like a doctor.
Also, there was a stage play that was called Alibi, but then this is kind of confusing because it wasn't written, it was adapted, but it wasn't written by Agatha Christie, but it was adapted. And it played for like 250 performances. The great English actor Charles Laughton played Poirot, but then Christie rewrote it and it became her first stage play, which is called Black Coffee. And it wasn't as successful as other ones, but this is the thing that really is potentially for me, it bothers me, which is they made it into a film, and it was a film that Christie helped write. And the film was called Alibi, and it ran for 75 minutes. It was released on the 28th of April, 1931, produced by Julius S. Hagen. Austin Trevor played Poirot. I don't know who he is, but it's lost to time. The film no longer exists.
How do you lose that?
You know, the BBC used to tape over old shows.
Oh, my God.
Because they didn't think, and I think that might be a little bit of what happened here. It's just so sad. Although it was a film and not a video, so maybe it just like got so rotted that it didn't
corroded.
Yeah, I would give anything to hear that, to see that. And also, there's an old time radio show from the Campbell Playhouse Theater with Orson Welles.
Oh my God!
And I could only listen to like 10 minutes of it because Orson Welles introduces all of the actors who will be playing the roles at the beginning. And then he says that he will be playing Dr. Shepard. And then all of a sudden he stops and he goes, what's going on? And then Hercule Poirot enters the radio broadcast, the studio, but he's also being played by Orson Welles in, I just will say, potentially the worst Belgian accent I've ever heard.
Oh, no.
And so Orson Welles is playing himself, playing Dr. Shepard, but then he is also playing Hercule Poirot as a real person. And it is so annoying.
That has to be when he was like, I am so famous, I can do whatever I want, and nobody will question me. And nobody was like, Mr. Wells, this is a really dumb idea.
That is totally the feeling that you get. It was just like somebody should have been like,
no, don't do it.
Orson, buddy. Like you can't, that's not both, right?
Yeah. Pick one. You got to be one.
Pick one.
Yeah.
Pick one. And maybe don't be Hercule Poirot because your accent is unforgivable. It was also adapted as a 1.5-hour play for BBC Radio 4 in December of 1987, which you can find and listen to. There are a couple of – I didn't know this, but there's a couple television adaptations, including one with David Suchet. And but they have to have changed it so much. The one that I am the most impressed by, The Murder of Roger Ackroyd, was adapted as a 190-minute drama that played in Japan on Fuji Television April 14th, 2018, as a special drama under the title The Murder of Kuroido. And I want to find that.
Oh my
and
God.
I need to watch it.
Could we do like one of those like simul watching things where like we're on the phone and both press like play at the same time? Because that sounds so fun. I think this story would be so hard to turn into a film.
I completely agree.
Maybe it would be good for us to make it clear, like, as we do, Poirot Pals have been really trying to stay away from the TV shows just to keep my brain in the books. But this is one that I would be so interested to see, just to be like, how are you going to do that?
Yep.
Like,
yes, that's
please let me watch you try and just to see what people come up with. I wonder if our buddy Kenny B would ever do it.
Yeah, that's a challenge, right? That's a directorial challenge, Mr. B. Yeah, and I will say this too for people, read the book first. Don't watch. No. I'm never a person who says don't, because everybody can do what they want. But in this specific instance, I'm saying read the book first. Don't watch anything. Just read it.
It can't match the experience of reading the book. Also, sometimes like introductions and stuff, because the books have been around for like nearly 100 years, they're like, we can give away the ending in the introduction or in the foreword because it's so famous, everybody knows. And don't let them spoil you or spoil it for you.
there's a foreword by James Pritchard and there's an introduction by Louise Penny. And both of those things you should skip until you finish the book. Just skip them. Don't be like, let's see what Louise has to say.
Louise.
No, just
giving it away.
So when you are reading this book, what is your experience? Like, how have you situated yourself? Is there anything specific? Are you in the same place every time you're reading it? Is there a beverage involved? Is there any type of, I don't know, sports on in the background?
No. No, let's see. So this one is so interesting because just the way kind of life was when I was reading this, like a lot of things were happening and I was all over the place. And actually every book that we've read, I've been on an airplane at some point. That's and right. read it. Yeah. But like this one, so I didn't like curate my experience as much because things have been pretty haphazard and like nothing, like I just haven't had a schedule lately. But maybe that speaks to the book as well, that like, for me, I didn't have to like craft an environment. It was really easy to like put in my bag and go. But if I were to have an ideal setting, you can take it slow in the sense that like you don't have to gear up for it like I did for The Lynx, where I just have to be like, okay, Morris, like you are sitting down and you're going to read this and you can't get discouraged. Or if you do, like here's a treat to like help you get through this. This one, it's easy. You can relax with it, I would say, and just kind of enjoy it. So like it's a good before bed book. I don't know. I think curate as desired. I don't have too many specifics. How about you?
What I'm finding for the reread is what you said is exactly right. Not only do I not need to be situated in a certain way with all of my peculiars just perfectly laid
things.
Out,
yeah.
But my things, my special, you're right, exactly. Chad, why do you own so many thimbles? But like, but I find myself having a very hard time putting it down.
I have read this many times and still enjoyed reading it again with Poirot Pals in mind. And when I was getting to the end, I had just like, it was like a late night. I was in bed And, you know, I was the only one awake. Like, I think Priyush was asleep. And I was like, I'm so close. I've got to stay up and finish this. And I think you can't. Yeah. It's hard to do that with a book that you know so well, to be like, mm-hmm. let's justify feeling very sleepy tomorrow so you can just finish it now. But like, it's a book that will pull you through it, where you like, you're getting to the end and you like, you have all this momentum and you're like, I've just got to finish it in this really exciting way. Whereas like, I feel like, especially Lynx, you'd get there and then you'd be like, oh my God, I have 7 chapters left. Right. Like, right. Oh God. And in this one, it's just like, right. you're like, wait, it's over? And so,
right.
yeah, there's this like, I guess what we're saying is there's this like momentum or this thread that's like pulling you through it in a way that you get in other books, but this is the first time it's really popped up here.
And also something that you don't exclaim towards the end of the book is, who knew she was a gymnast? Like, that's not...
The one hint we can give everyone is that no one is an acrobat.
Right.
No one, I don't think anyone in this book has gone on a jog in a really long time.
I agree.
Okay, so let's see. I think the last thing we really want to say is that there is an accompanying playlist that we always curate. This one, I think you and I both tried to get the feeling of it, but also I played around a little bit, but I tried really hard to stick to the 20s. I thought that was a really like classical music that was composed then, you know, music that people were listening to, but also trying, it was hard to locate, like, if I were these characters and I were in the countryside, maybe I wouldn't be listening to the most modern classical music out there. And I wouldn't be listening to the most like progressive jazz. So it was like one of the more challenging ones to really find the right vibe or the right mood. So I hope that you enjoy it, because I think both you and I were like, okay, what do we do with this? And I'm happy with what we came up with.
Yeah, I think you did a great job with it. I put a couple of things on there that make sense for what you were saying. And then I put one in there that I thought was kind of like a cover of a song that could kind of be a clue as to what happens in the book.
Ooh, so, I have to re-listen and try to find that one. I'm excited about that. So Chad has given you a clue, an audio musical clue.
Yeah, through the Spotify playlist that Caitlin basically worked really hard on. And then I was like, I'm messing this up.
No, not at all. No, they're always so fun. It just like really satisfies my need to be doing 7 things at once, to be reading and putting together a playlist.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, oh my gosh. Okay. We are excited for everyone to read it. Like we said before, read it. And then listen to the debrief. Because the debrief, we will be giving spoilers.
The spoilers right away.
I think that's it. We're excited to embark upon another Poirot journey with everyone. And hopefully we'll maintain our sanity a little bit more this time around. Who knows? Watch us like record 12 episodes and we're like, what did we do to ourselves? Is this how it's going to be? I just can't imagine it. But who knows?
Or we do a complete callback and we do 54 episodes that have come out day to day to day.
Oh my God. We would die.
That would be hilarious.
It's tragic, but also kind of funny.
I'm looking so forward to the debrief. Thanks to everyone who has been listening.
Yes. You guys are awesome.
Thank you. It's so great. Yeah. Anyways, I guess, Caitlin, I'll see you at the debrief.
Yeah, see you at the debrief.